Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey, and as Rocky would say to Bullwinkle, this time for sure, talking with Steve Bauer. He's executive director of FEA, which is the Federal Employee Education and Assistance Fund, and Steve is talking to us today from Orlando. What are you doing down there, Steve?
I'm at the Federal Aviation Administration Managers Association meeting. They're big contributors during their meeting, and gives us a chance to spread the message about FEA to more federal employees.
Tell President Connolly hello and my regards. I went out to one of their conventions in Las Vegas one time, and watching these air traffic controllers play cards is something to see. They're professional card counters. They can't help it. But Steve, without further ado, you've got one of the most interesting jobs. I started to say in government. You're a retired government executive from Social Security, but you've got one of the most interesting jobs, and it's got to be rewarding too. Tell people what you do.
Oh, it's absolutely phenomenal. A great second career. I've been doing it for 25 years now. As executive director of the Federal Employee Education Assistance Fund, basically I help federal employees help other federal employees when they need help. Employees donate, and we provide educational and emergency financial assistance to civilian federal employees and their families, including postal workers. You know, years and years before FEA was even thought about, there were military agencies like Army Emergency Relief, Navy Marine Corps Relief Society, Air Force Aid, Coast Guard Mutual Assistance. If you wore a uniform and you got into trouble, they would help you. But if you were a civilian, even working on a base side by side, somebody in uniform, they couldn't do it. And that was the genesis of FEA in 1986.
Well, in today's column, thanks to you, I mentioned that the two Navy SEALs that were killed in that terrorist attack in Libya left behind them five minor children. And you told me the other day that they're going to be getting scholarships.
Absolutely. We have what we call a diplomatic fund. It was started after the bombings in Africa of our embassies, and we had a number of children added into the program, some of whom have already completed college, gotten their degrees, and gone on to a productive life. It seems like when something happens in the United States, take 9/11, the Oklahoma City Federal Building bombing, Hurricane Katrina, it's in the news and it stays in the news. But when our diplomats overseas, something happens, it doesn't tend to stay in the news nearly as long, nor generate the kind of concern that happens when something happens in the United States. So there was a real need for this fund, and we've added children from church bombing in Pakistan, and then obviously the most recently was the consulate attack in Benghazi. Diplomats are putting their life on the line.
Well, I got a call this morning from a VA employee, and he said actually these kids, talking about the children of the SEALs, will get 100% paid for college education, including a housing allowance while in school, through the VA's FRY scholarship program. So more good news in that realm. Steve, going back to Oklahoma City, there are probably an awful lot of people who don't know what Oklahoma City is or don't remember it. Tell us what happened there.
Well, it was a lovely morning in Oklahoma City, and a lot of people went to work, and 168 of them never came home. And they were almost all federal employees working in the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building bombing. Two madmen decided that they would blow up that building because federal employees work there.
They were mad at the government.
They were mad at the government. That's putting it very mildly. And they were crazy and wildly successful, unfortunately. I was out there the day following the bombing, First Christian Church, with the families waiting for news of loved ones who either bodies had not been identified or they had hoped were still alive in the building as they dug through the rubble. Unfortunately, those miracles did not come to pass, and nobody was dug out alive. And we realized that there were going to be a lot of children without parents, and no idea at the time that there were going to be 200 of them. And that includes some of the children who survived in the daycare center but were injured. So we decided we would set up a scholarship program for them. We appropriately called it the OK Fund. And it touched the hearts, I think, of not just federal employees, but people outside of the federal government, corporate people who wanted to contribute. And we were able to fully fund that so that every one of those children could go to any college of their choice and get their entire college education paid for, and even $5,000 a year if they went on to graduate school. It's been a wildly successful program. We've had 190 children that we put through school, and there's still 10 to go. I think, as you know, there was a child born 3 months after the bombing that's eligible for this program. So even though it happened 17 years ago, we've still got kids in school, and we've still got some to actually enter college.
Yeah, it's incredible in any way you look at it. And I know when you and I have talked about it before, you mentioned that five or six of the people that were killed at Oklahoma City that day were kids in the daycare centers. And so not only were they killed, but in many cases their parents were killed. Just an absolutely horrible tragedy. Little lighter vein, this I was regaling some people at work here this morning about the fact that at least one time you jumped on an airplane heading for an emergency and you had a suitcase full of cash. What's the deal on that?
Well, it was actually a Hurricane Andrew that happened in 1992 in the Miami area in the state of Florida where I am right now. Thankfully, the weather is beautiful here today. But that hurricane was one of the most forceful ones to hit the United States, and the center of the storm went just south of Miami and basically wiped out the town of Homestead, Florida, where at that time there was a fairly large base, Homestead Air Force
Base.
Yeah. Yep. And not only were the Air Force down there, but there was a drug interdiction unit down there as we were fighting the drug war at that time, and people were trying to get in via boats from South America and the Caribbean. And so there were lots of folks down there. And I got a call right after the hurricane blew through, and somebody said, okay, you help federal employees. We got a lot of folks down here that need help. And would you bring cash? And I kind of hesitated, and they told me why, and I'll tell Eunice in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I said, okay. And basically, this was in FIA's early years. We didn't have a lot of money. I took $20,000 in from the bank in $150 bills, put them in a very large envelope, which I put on the inside pocket of my jacket, and boarded a plane in Denver to fly into Miami. And as I said, we were fighting the drug war, so of course I was kind of suspicious carrying $20,000 in cash.
You're the perfect mule profile.
Exactly. Nervous as hell. I'd never had that much cash in my pocket before. But I managed to get through security in Denver. We are headquartered in Lakewood, Colorado, right outside of Denver, and flew down to Miami, got to Miami, landed, and got picked up by what at that time was called the U.S. Customs Service. But it wasn't because I was a drug mule. It was because they had some Black Hawk helicopters available that they'd used for drug interdiction and were able to fly me down to Homestead. The only way you could get down there was via helicopter. The roads were absolutely impassable, trees everywhere, lights out, no electricity. And when I got down there, the reason we needed cash is the federal employees down there needed cash because there was no electricity. There were no ATMs that worked. The two branches of Homestead Savings and Loan had literally been wiped off the face of the earth. They needed to buy things as basic as water. And there were people, of course, gouging them for prices, but they had to have cash to do it. There were people that needed generators so they could run electrical equipment to literally stay alive. And we were able to help almost 500 families down there using that. Those that could take checks, we wrote checks for things that they needed, but a lot of those folks really needed that cash.
Yeah, it's people who've been involved in disasters. Hurricane Katrina is case in point. They tell you don't bring stuff. Don't send peanut butter and don't send lima beans. Send cash. We need to buy it as close as possible to the affected area. But talking with Steve Bauer, I need to take a short break here. I'll be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Security is what they do. With Ackerman, you get the professionalism of the Washington area's only UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center for just $18.95 a month. If you're paying more, you can switch for free and start saving today. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive 2 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Really? One website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
It's about time. Why didn't I think of that?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live events versus webcasts, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
Seriously? I can't believe I haven't heard of this site before. What is it again?
It's GovEvents.com, the best place to find government events that matter to you, near you.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Bauer. He is Executive Director of FEA, Federal Employees Education Assistance Fund. Steve was telling us about the time he flew to Homestead Air Force Base or near Homestead Air Force Base because of Hurricane Andrew with a pockets full of cash, and it was an exciting time. And, Steve, I guess normally the way FEA handles it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is people in need come to you.
Absolutely, and that's why it's important that people know about FEA, first of all,
yeah.
Because if they don't, we can't help them. Now, most people go to FEA.org, FEEA.org, right on the homepage. When people need help, it says get help now, and in January, the scholarship application, the annual scholarship competition is right there. There's even a Give Now button where people can give, although the prime way that people give to us is through the Combined Federal Campaign, which is going on right now. I loved your column today where you said, where is the money coming from?
Yeah.
And the short answer, you.
Yeah. And what number are you on the Combined Federal Campaign? Do you know?
We are 11185. And we're a national charity, so that means no matter what combined federal campaign you're at,
okay,
you just put in 1185, and the money will end up with FEA next year from your payroll deduction.
And most of the money, I know, comes from individual people, but Tom O'Connor, a name that may be familiar to you, emailed in and said, ask Steve to show off the trophy his team won last week in the IRS Golf League's Commissioner's Cup. Raised some good funds, too.
I've been playing in that charity tournament put on by IRS employees on their own time, of course. They're all on leave, and I come in and play in that out in Front Royal at Shenandoah Course, and after 12 years, I think they felt sorry for me. We finished third, but the other significant thing was they let me hit from the gold tees a little closer up to the hole because I'm now 62 years old. So
absolutely.
Bless their hearts. But
yeah.
They are. It's a wonderful Commissioner's Cup tournament every year. Their heart's in the right place. It's a great day, and we raise a lot of money there every year.
I know you've always had good things to say about them. And also, you have some corporate sponsors, and I've been at these various functions that you've been at, and they are extremely generous, both in the money they give FEA and in some of the prizes and trophies they give to give away. Nanette Hayes is usually there from Blue Cross Blue Shield. GEICO always has a strong team, and long-term care partners showing up both with gifts and giveaways and also donations.
Absolutely. The three organizations you just mentioned, we couldn't live without. Blue Cross, Blue Shield, GEICO, and long-term care partners. Feds has become a good corporate sponsor now as well. But these guys, I mean, their business is selling to federal employees, whether it's car insurance, GEICO, health insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield, long-term care insurance from long-term care partners, and they feel they should be given back to federal employees. And they have chosen, as one of their best ways of doing that, is making donations to FEA and helping us publicize the program, letting their national reps know about it. And they, you know, if somebody has a health insurance problem, it's probably because there was a health problem and there may be a need that FEA can help with. So they even refer people to us. But Blue Cross Blue Shield donated recently $25,000 for natural disaster assistance, which it turned out we needed very much after Hurricane Isaac. GEICO gave us $30,000 at a Nationals game, as a matter of fact, right on the field. And Long-Term Care Partners makes a regular scholarship contribution and now is going to donate an additional $5,000 because of the amazing needs. You know, we mentioned Benghazi, but Hurricane Isaac was in the news for one day because it hit the Gulf area on the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And then it disappeared from the news.
Sort of morphed away. It was Katrina.
Exactly. So, but it turns out we've already helped over 500 federal employees down there, a lot of them from the USDA National Finance Center. The VA has a very large facility in New Orleans. And what's happened is a lot of these people are people that rebuilt after Katrina. And in order to get homeowners insurance, which they must have if they still had a mortgage after they rebuilt, the only way they could get that is with incredibly high deductibles. I have one gentleman who had over $12,000 in damage to his home, sent the estimate in for what he needed to fix up, and he sent in his insurance policy. His deductible was $14,250, and that's the only way he could get homeowners insurance. So the folks down there needed a lot of help, once again, rebuilding. It's not so much flooding, but there was a lot of wind damage to the homes.
Given the state of the economy and whatnot, are you seeing an uptick in people asking for grants or loans?
Grants and no-interest loans. And I just looked earlier this morning, and in 2008, we did $250,000 in no-interest loans to federal employees. This past 12 months, we've done 652,000. So if you do the math, it's 2.5 times what it was just 5 years ago. And there's been no let up in that. Families are having problems. You know, federal employees aren't getting raises. It doesn't mean their bills aren't going up. Makes it more difficult to meet that emergency situation. Spouses have lost jobs and haven't been able to find them. Ex-spouses have lost their jobs and stopped paying child support. So the economics have played a big role in the increasing need for FEA, and I think economics have also played a role in the fact that our donations have been flat for the last 3 years, despite the fact that the need has gone up and up and up. We've still helping people going into our reserves, but again, it's combined federal campaign time, and those that can't do that can contribute right at FEA.org via credit card, and the need is there, and it seems to continue to increase.
Well, today's column on our homepage, The Horrible Situation, Wonderful Response, is all about FEA and what it's done, and the Oklahoma City thing will always haunt me, some of the stories you've told. And I didn't want to use the term godfather in print because it implies disrespect, but you have, in effect, been godfather to 200 kids from the Oklahoma City bombing, and you've had some personal interplay with all of them, haven't you?
Yeah, it's very interesting, particularly in the early years. You know, you can imagine how psychologically damaging it might be to lose your parent in such a terrible, terrible incident.
Yeah.
And we had a number of kids that took well more than 4 years to get through college because they mm-hmm. couldn't concentrate. They needed this. They needed that. It's died off a little bit. The kids going to college now, their parents were very young. Or they were very young,
yeah,
and their parents died, so it's not as traumatic, although certainly no less damaging. But, we had a lot of interplay with a lot of the kids. The beautiful part of it is that so many of the kids were determined to get their degrees, to go out and be productive not as MBAs, but as physical therapists, doctors, nurses, all these helping professions. It was absolutely amazing how many felt the need to give back because they were remembered and they were helped through their tragedy. So it's really a beautiful circle, if you will.
Well, I remember you saying at the time that particularly in the Oklahoma City situation, which was 200 kids, if you will, that how many of them stayed in the area really feeling a close, a need to be close to their surviving parents.
Absolutely. A wonderful community. Their neighbors supported them, certainly not just via the other charities in Oklahoma City. They were a part of that community. Very, very few moved away. Certainly helped us fund the college education because many of them went to Oklahoma State colleges and not to to Harvard's or Brown's or UCLA's, although some did, and bless their hearts. So.
Yeah, I thought that very high percentage going into the helping professions was wonderful. Well, Steve, listen, thanks for being with us. Certainly appreciate your time and what you do. And I guess I'll be seeing you Friday when you're here to do the Bill Bransford Show live.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to
it. Thank you much. Take a short break. Be right back talking with the Federal Times people.
The year was 1930. The epic flight that had made Charles Lindbergh a superstar was in the history books. And the spirit of St. Louis was in the Smithsonian. But Lucky Lindy had his sights on a new challenge, a non-stop flight across the U.S. To accomplish this feat, he needed more than luck. He needed a new plane. For that, he turned to Lockheed, where under his watchful eye, the Lockheed Sirius took shape. In April of that year, with his wife Ann Morrow Lindbergh acting as co-pilot, he took off from Los Angeles and arrived in New York City a mere 14 hours, 45 minutes, 32 seconds later. They'd broken the record by 3 hours. 60 years later, another museum-bound aircraft, Lockheed Martin's SR-71, crossed the country in just over 1 hour and took its place alongside the Spirit of St. Louis. Their stories are our stories. See them unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
Do you hear that? That's a cuttlefish. Ars Raytheon sees it the future of infrared technology. By studying how cephalopods manipulate light, we're driving innovation in IR imaging. With systems that are lighter, use less power, and deliver revolutionary clarity. After all, when your mission is innovation, your inspiration can come from anywhere. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
We see the hiker. He appears injured.
Every day, the Army and National Guard take to the skies in their newest helicopter, the UH-72A Lakota from EADS North America. Whether for medical evacuation, search and rescue, or emergency response, the Lakota ensures our armed forces complete the mission.
Hiker is secure.
And every Lakota has been delivered on time and on budget.
ETA, 30 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
A Maryland high school student who recently won the prestigious Intel Science Competition is engineering a simple test that could revolutionize cancer detection and treatment. Jack Andreka was keeping an ear on his biology teacher's lesson about antibodies while secretly reading an article on carbon nanotubes.
Basically an atom-thick tube of carbon, and it's 1/50,000th the diameter of your hair.
And it hit him. When a thicket of nanotubes spreads apart, even slightly, electric signals can be detected. So combine them with antibodies that latch onto a protein in the blood of cancer patients, put that on a paper test strip, and a simple test might be made.
Prick your finger for a sixth of a drop of blood, and then you can read whether or not you have pancreatic, ovarian, or lung cancer.
Johns Hopkins researchers helped Jack engineer the concept. He says it not only works, but it's way faster, cheaper, and more sensitive than current tests. Simple enough to monitor treatment progress daily. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And remember, our shows are archived on our homepage, so you might want to have a friend tell a friend about this and listen to this thing about the FEA and the federal employees helping federal employees. So it's a wonderful charity, and the corporate sponsors, everybody involved is wonderful. So I highly recommend it. We've got my guests now are Andy Medici and Nicole Johnson from the Federal Times. Folks, you with us?
Yes, thanks for having us on.
Thank you, in your plush studios across the Potomac there. Good to have you with us. Listen, there's so much going on. I looked through your front page and ever-changing things. You had an interesting story about mentoring in the government.
Yeah, Mike. Good morning.
Morning.
I really had a great time writing the story. It really started off kind of looking into a mentorship program that SEA and YGL were partnering to do, and it started as a pilot and grew into a larger story as I sat down with these folks and really heard their stories from the younger feds coming in about what they were looking toward the more senior feds for guidance and how to get through their careers, how to navigate the waters of the federal government and get off to a good start. So
I'm always interested in how well the government seems to do things like this compared to the private sector when, you know, it's elbows out and you're guarding your job. And a lot of people, you know, frankly, don't much care what happens to the institution when they leave. Government workers seem to be an exception to that.
They really are. And it was neat to talk to some of the experts. And one thing that they had mentioned is that federal agencies should really do a better job of reaching out to those retirees once they've left, because a lot of them have so much knowledge to contribute and they're willing to do that for free. They're not looking for monies or looking to be consultants, but they really identify with those agencies, similar to the way that college graduates identify with their alma mater.
I keep saying it comes back to the word service. And when you talk to people who retired from various private sector things, Wall Street, whatever, they say, I worked at so-and-so or I was there for 50 years. Government workers invariably say, I served, like the military people. It's a different feeling with the employer.
It really is, and it was so exciting to hear the stories, especially from some of these people who have been working in the federal government for 30 years, and it was funny to hear one of the mentees saying, you've been doing this longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
So.
Ouch. Yeah, my favorite line is, that happened before I was born, and to which I reply, so did most things, you know. Even I don't remember the fall of the Roman Empire, or just the last part. We're getting closer to sequestration. The S word is everywhere in Washington now. And each week, it seems, some new group or politician comes out with a white paper or a blueprint that's showing what sequestration would look like. The latest was from Congressman Norman Dix of Washington State. He's a Democrat, and he's a longtime friend of feds, and he's pretty scary stuff.
That's scary is a bit of an understatement.
Yeah.
No matter where you are in the government, this little paper he sent out has some bad news for you, whether you're in the Department of Homeland Security or you're at Social Security or in defense. It seems like there's a bit of bad news for everyone.
Well, I saw your story, this Andy Medici, and I think you said that Homeland Security alone would lose 24,000 people?
That's correct. You know, this is one of those agencies where it's gonna take a hard hit, and that's going to include Border Patrol agents, Secret Service. It's going to be FEMA people. It's going to be thousands of TSA officers, thousands of immigration and customs officers. So it's going to take a hit across almost all of its components.
Well, President Obama earlier said that it would be disastrous for the government if sequestration took place, and yet they've told contractors not to conform with this law that requires them to send out warning notices of possible furloughs and possible layoffs. How does that work?
Well, I mean, as we've dealt with government shutdowns before, and the administration has always been very tight and close-lipped about it, and I think their position is that they both don't want to panic people, but also that these are not set-in-stone cuts. Anything that Congress does, including the sequestration, Congress could easily undo. It's just a matter of getting the will to do it.
You know, where did this sequestration come from? I have yet to hear anybody say anything good about it. It's as if Congress, Dr. Strangelove, planted this doomsday bomb, and now that they've planted it, they say, oh, don't let it go off.
Well, this is, you know, success has a lot of fathers, but, you know, they say failure's an orphan. And
you're right.
This is one of those situations where Obama wanted to raise the debt ceiling. He asked Congress for that authority, which Congress normally does, but in this situation, they wanted to put some spending limits in place. So what they decided to do is, if they couldn't find $1.2 trillion in savings within a year, these sequestration cuts would go into effect. And, you know, lo and behold, Congress couldn't agree on what the cuts were. These automatic cuts were supposed to be the stick when it comes to trying to get them to do something about it. But now we're facing a tighter and tighter timeline before the sequestration kicks in.
Well, you have another story that says that Governor Romney is talking about undoing any defense cuts that have been made or contemplated. What's that about?
Well, you know, the defense industry is a very, very strong constituency, and a lot of people have talked about undoing the defense cuts in particular because there does seem to be more support for that than, for example, the civilian side or some of the agencies that politicians have tried to cut in the past, like Social Security or the IRS. So in this situation, focusing on defense is an attempt to undo some of the more unpopular parts of sequestration.
Well, I've seen some attack ads in our neighboring state of Virginia here. These are against Mr. Kane, who's running for the Senate as a Democrat. And the attack ads say that as governor, he pursued policies that would or could cost Virginia 245,000 jobs, I believe was the number. I keep seeing that number, 245, 250, in every report that people put out, but it seems to hit a different segment of the economy. How confident are you, if at all, about these numbers?
Well, this is one of those situations where there's a little bit of hypothetical thinking here, and the idea is it's not just the number of federal employees who are cut. It's the number of jobs that are tied to federal spending when it comes to grants, programs, tax credits, things that affect businesses. And, you know, when federal employees aren't working, they're not shopping as much. They're not purchasing homes. So it's the ripple effect through the economy. And the one thing that people can agree on, whether the numbers are different, is that it would be bad.
I remember when the Base Realignment and Closure Commission, BRAC, was moving people around, closing things and moving people around, and they moved a lot of feds into the Washington area, particularly in Northern Virginia. And someone at that time said that each federal job generated six other jobs or people, and that is, you know, maybe tradesmen, restaurants, parking, school teachers, what have you.
Well, it's that ripple effect that we were talking about.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where people are worried. And, you know, we're in a delicate economy right now, and people are worried that if you have suddenly a lot of people who lose their jobs, they just won't be able to do the things that they normally do. And for a lot of people, that means a loss of jobs down the road.
The retirement pipeline, has the tsunami that started, the predictions first came out in 1999, has the retirement tsunami, the tidal wave, hit us?
Well, my coworker Steve Losey has been working on that a lot, and he's seeing that uptick, and it's steadily increasing month after month. And this is one of those situations where, you know, we won't really know we're in that tsunami until the wave is over us. But in this situation, it does seem that there's some evidence that this is actually happening now.
Well, and the irony of it is that the Office of Personnel Management has been plagued with slow retirement processing in some areas for decades, and now John Berry has made it a top priority to cut it down, shave the time, and get people full annuity checks sooner. And even as they're seeming to be managing to do that, they're getting more people, more retirees piled on them.
Well, yeah, this is something where it's almost a perfect storm of what's happening now. But there have been more policies put in place, and John Berry has put in more people, more specialists to work on these. Now we'll see, the proof will be in the pudding in terms of how quickly people get their full annuities and whether they're shortchanged in the temporary ones when the time comes for them to leave the government.
Nicole, what's your outlook on the sequestration? What are you seeing?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that because Tech America Foundation just put out a study yesterday, actually had a press briefing, and over the next 2 days they'll be speaking with industry and a couple others. And they laid out five scenarios, and the scenario that they find most likely to happen will be Congress and the incoming administration coming up with some bipartisan solution. Whether that happens before January 2nd, is yet to be seen. But what they're saying is they think that it will involve a combination of maybe some tax reforms and also a way to ensure that cuts won't be as steep starting off initially, but over time that you will end up in the same place where sequestration had intentionally set out to get us, which would be reducing the budget deficit by $1.2 trillion.
I don't know if you're familiar with the term Washington Monument cut. It's been around forever, and I guess it goes back 30, 40 years. But the idea is when Congress or the president, but usually Congress, cuts the budget of, say, the Interior Department, then they retaliate by shutting down the elevators to the Washington Monument when all the school kids are here for spring break. And we need to take a spring break ourselves, but I'll be right back. I wanted to ask you about that. Be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's neither one, but a hero just the same. It's a federal worker giving to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities. She pulls someone out of harm's way with every payroll contribution. He champions the people in his community with every CFC charity he designates. When you choose CFC code 31408 and give through payroll contributions, you're changing the life of someone in need. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Active duty members of the Army, Navy, and Air Force can now take advantage of the Thrift Savings Plan's Roth option. Marines and civilian feds began contributing back in June. Under the Roth, taxes are paid up front instead of when money is withdrawn from the account. More information about setting up a Roth TSP is available at the Defense Finance and Accounting Services website, dfas.mil. The annual limit for Roth contributions is $17,000.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? Federal employees with WEPA Life Insurance will be receiving over $7 million in premium refunds this fall. Since 1996, WEPA has refunded over $65 million in premiums. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Isn't it time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. That's WAEPA.org.
Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International.
Howard Hayes, Acting Director of the Office of Information Technology at the Indian Health Service, talks about technology transforming healthcare.
When you're just looking at a patient and a patient chart, that tells you about that patient, but it doesn't tell you about everybody that I see. With the technology that we have that is available today, I can bring up all of my patients.
Agency of the Month, Wednesdays in October at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Cancer claims more than 570,000 lives each year and costs more than $102 billion in care expenses alone. ICF International plays a role in every aspect of cancer data collection and dissemination, helping clients track this deadly disease across the country. They provide researchers, including those working at the National Institutes of Health, with information they need to better fight cancer or prevent it altogether. Find out how their public health work improves the quality of life at ICFI.com.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
Pending legislation, federal budget cuts, contracting efficiencies, contract management best practices, acquisition trends, and the relationship of government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 31st Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Hear from Ted Leonsis, CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Frank Kendall, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and General George Casey, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Learn more at ncmahq.org.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Andy Medici and Nicole Johnson from the Federal Times. And before the break, Nicole had outlined the latest report on the likelihood of what could happen if sequestration takes place. And she said one of the scenarios, the one that many think is the most likely, is that nothing will happen, or if it does happen, it will be minimal and go slow because Congress and the White House will work out some kind of deal. Is that right?
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, the scenario really that Tech America laid out, which, like I said, they laid out five scenarios, mm-hmm. with this one having a 35% chance likelihood, is that at some point, perhaps not before January 2nd, but over the course of next year or so, come up with some sort of bipartisan solution that could involve tax reforms and other efforts that would alleviate the cuts, so you wouldn't see the steep cut initially, but more gradually over time and into the out years.
Well, what you're hearing, and Andy, feel free to join in on this, from agencies, we were talking about the Washington Monument cut, whereby Interior Department's budget is reduced, Interior closes the elevator to the Washington Monument. When the school kids are here, kids call their parents, the parents call Congress. The budget cuts are canceled. And we're seeing a little bit of that. There's been talk of Interior can't close the monument because the earthquake we had last year did that. It's still being repaired, so they're not letting people go up in it. But there are other things they could do, and there's been talk about national parks, curtailed hours or service. I've seen things about FBI agents. I mean, how much of this is hype and how much of it is it could happen?
Well, this is one of those situations, and you mentioned this, of course, is that agencies are trying to deal with these budget cuts, but the idea is that the money that people pay in taxes doesn't just go nowhere. It goes to things that people care about. So the idea behind the sequestration reports is to highlight maybe the most salacious details, but, you know, the most important to people in terms of who's going to get cut. So, for example, national parks are very popular, and they want to highlight that if these cuts occur, people won't be able to go to the parks. And, you know, they call their congressman and, you know, push them to do something about it. So this serves the dual purpose of highlighting various government functions that people might not really realize off the bat, and also highlighting potential for what these cuts might do.
Nicole, what do you think?
Well, I'm just hoping none of the monuments are shut down because I'll have people in town. So I'm hoping that some sort of agreement is reached soon. And, you know, my focus is really IT, and I haven't really seen agencies, you know, putting out details. I'm sure everyone saw the OMB report, and it was rather vague. It really didn't give you detail about what the cuts would mean. You did see a couple related to DHS and the CIO office. You did see a couple within GSA, within their office that really handles digital and citizen services. So I know agencies have some initiatives going forward, data center consolidation, making more services mobile, and, you know, I'm sure they're really hoping that they have set funds and that those won't be impacted so they can make sure that the public receives data in a timely manner.
Okay, and now with we have more people retiring, and you're reporting that the new hires are down. Is that the case?
Yeah, this is one of the situations where, you know, agencies are in a budget bind. People are leaving, and there are, in many cases, just not as many people replacing them. You know, that's going to put a strain on what everyone remaining sort of has to do.
Well, you know, we're talking about IT. I think a lot of people are under the impression that computers can replace hundreds and thousands of people, and they have to some extent, but computers also generate work of their own, don't they?
They really do. They generate work of their own, and they generate the amount of digital data and a lot of unstructured data. We've been writing a lot about big data. Tech America released a report on that as well. And when you have more employees, using video, sending email, you have all these devices out there. In addition to BlackBerry's, employees are wanting to use their iPhones and iPads. So having to manage the data, having to secure the data, and having to make sense of the data, that is increased as the number of technology and devices increase.
I read something recently about a major company that was telling its people not to take work home with them. Sounds counterintuitive, but they said don't access your email from home. Get some rest, clean your brain out, get it done in 8 or 9 hours or whatever. Is that happening in the government? Is anybody there saying that technology is taking over?
And I've written about that, about the whole work-life balance, and I've heard different sides to the story. I've heard, one coming from agencies, that these mobile devices are seen as productivity tools. They allow employees to get work done in the field, outside of the office, do it faster, do it when it's convenient for them. But on the flip side, if you get an email from your manager at 10 p.m. at night, you're feeling obligated to answer that email and having to cut off the balance between, okay, I'm at work from this time to this time. When I go home, I'm no longer at work, but you have your work with you. So even though you're not physically at work, you're virtually at work.
Well, I was with someone last year about 11 o'clock at night, and she got an email from her agency, a text, I guess, and it was to get going for a project, and the words White House were mentioned in it. So it got everybody's attention. But that seems to me like a terrible way to run a railroad.
It really is. And I think that managers should be mindful, because there are employees who, that's not considered, it may or may not be considered overtime, and whether they're compensating these employees for that additional time outside of the office, they really need to be careful with that. I talked to one manager who said that he time stamps his email so that even though he writes them at 1 o'clock in the morning, they don't end up in the employee's inbox until 8 a.m. the next morning.
Oh, what a great idea. What a great idea.
I thought so.
Yeah. How low tech I am. I didn't know that could be done. I'm going to pass the word of that around there. What are you guys working on now?
Well, I'm taking a look at energy prices and how it's impacting agency budgets. Agencies are working to cut all the costs that they can to avoid furloughs and to avoid layoffs. But in situations like you see in California, where gas is now, approaching $5 a gallon, it's eating up all of those savings. And, those savings are going to have to come from either the overhead or from employee salaries.
Well, I think that would be particularly a problem in California, but also in Alaska and Hawaii, where everything is higher. And they've got a large concentration of federal workers and federal operations.
Yeah, and this is one of those situations where you have to pay the light bill. You could reduce the cost as much as you want, but at the end of the day, the lights have to be on. So there's only so much available to cut, and it seems that year after year, the amount that they cut is eaten away by the amount of increase in the cost of gas and electricity.
Yeah, Nicole, you got anything in the pipeline?
Yeah, for now, I'm really digging deeper into some of these Tech America numbers. I think it's always great when they're laying out a forecast for you over the next 5 years in terms of annual IT spending, and then they break it down by both civilian and defense. So what the report is saying essentially is that they're projecting overall IT spending to remain relatively stable through 2018. They call it more of an anemic growth, but going from $73.5 billion this fiscal year to about $77.2 billion in 2008. So just digging deeper into those numbers, where agencies will be investing. For fiscal 2014, they're definitely going to have to comply with OMB budget guidance to reduce those budgets by about 10% and look for areas to reinvest. So, and reinvest in projects that are going to bring them a return on investment within 18 months. So they have a lot of work ahead of them.
Well, that's fairly refreshing when all we've been hearing from the pressure groups and the groups with the dog in this fight. The federal employee people say the government will be gutted, there'll be furloughs and layoffs. The contractors say their contracting side of government will be gutted and people will be laid off and furloughed. And everybody has a horror story, and the Tech America gives the chances that it won't happen or it won't happen to any extent at 35%. I guess that's pretty good when you're talking sequestration. I wouldn't want 35% odds if I was leaping out of an airplane. But.
Well, it's this is one of those things where it all really comes down to what Congress is willing to do. And, you know, Congress, they could call a special session, get together tomorrow, and they can get rid of sequestration in its entirety. They can change the way it looks. So, you know, nothing's set in stone and nothing's an absolute. So despite all these reports, you know, there are still opportunities to change it, to modify it, to get rid of it entirely.
Well, it's interesting in Washington, and especially on this beat, we've all been looking at things, the high three, high five, and then suddenly, boom, it just goes away. And with that said, we've got to go away, too. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Nicole, for being with us. We'll do this again next week. Remember, we're archived, so you can listen to the show anytime. Have a good week. We'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m.